Welcome to The Weekly, a look back at WHQR's top stories of the past 7 days. It's Saturday, September 19th. I'm Caitlin Freund. Coronavirus metrics are going in the right direction in North Carolina. That's why Governor Roy Cooper says he's allowing school districts to open elementary schools for in-person learning. Rachel Lewis Hilburn has that story.
The science seems to show that younger children, mainly under 10, are less likely to catch the virus, exhibit symptoms, suffer severe disease from the virus, and they're less likely to pass it to others. Add that emerging data to the 4 metrics state officials use to shape their policy, and Governor Cooper says it's time to allow some schools more in-person learning.
North Carolina public school districts will be permitted to choose option A for their elementary school students only in kindergarten through fifth grade. Option A continues to include important safety measures like required face coverings for all students, teachers, and staff, social distancing, and symptom screening. But Plan A does not require schools to reduce the number of children in the classroom.
Each school district has the authority to make their own decision, says Cooper, and they'll be allowed to adopt Option A starting October 5th. Governor Cooper says he also understands parents are eager to see their older kids in class and playing sports. State officials say they hope to have more news on that front soon, as coronavirus cases, deaths, and hospitalizations continue to decline in North Carolina. Rachel Lewis Hilburn, WHQR News.
And the new Hanover County School Board voted on Tuesday to begin the second 9-week period with Plan B. That means students will rotate in 3 groups, with 1 week of in-person instruction followed by 2 weeks online. Rachel Keith has the details.
Board member Bill Rivenbark says he's been hearing from a lot of parents about the importance of reopening schools.
I had one lady said, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, I can't take it anymore. I want to leave my kids at the house and go on a vacation. These people are going crazy, and they want to get their kids back in school as soon as possible.
But as school administrators presented their recommendation to move to Plan B, board member Judy Justice was concerned that no representative from public health was present.
But we need the health department here so we can ask them questions so the community can hear their answers. And without that, I do not feel comfortable at all about having our kids back in the schools.
Prior to the vote on Plan B, David Wortman brought a motion to reopen the schools on an A-B plan, one where 2 groups of students alternate in-person instruction during the week. The motion failed, with Wortman the only one in favor. The motion to move to Plan B ultimately passed 6-1, with Justice the lone dissenting vote. Board member Nelson Bollier expressed concern about the toll the plan will take on teachers.
They're going to be doing things they've never done before. Not just in terms of instruction, but logistically. I just worry that we are pushing them to a breaking point.
Rachel Keith, WHQR News.
Also on Tuesday evening, Wilmington City Council approved allocating COVID-19 relief funds to Good Shepherd, as well as an agreement for the long-anticipated development at Castle Street. But it was the proposed Riverwalk improvements and Waves redevelopment that drew the most debate from council. Hannah Brasinger has more.
Deputy City Manager Tom Moten proposed improvements to the Riverwalk and Visitor Center, emphasizing a need to revamp the design and increase safety. Councilmember Charlie Rivenbark said that safety concerns are related to the area's presence of people who are homeless or suffer from mental illness.
I know that our police department struggles with it, the attorney's office struggles with it, but you can have the nicest facility on the East Coast there, but if you've got an element there like pictures of somebody that's just passed out laying there on the sidewalk, we can't have that.
Moten noted that certain design fixes could deter certain behaviors, but he pointed out that addressing social needs is also necessary. Council member Kevin Spears agreed.
Right, because, we're not going to new facility our way out of this problem.
Later in the evening, the city's budget director responded to last month's concerns that the consultant working on Waves restructuring isn't prioritizing riders. But with neighboring municipalities no longer providing funds for Wave, Mayor Bill Sappho said council didn't have much of a choice but to fund the Trans Pro contract.
the whole concept of this regional concept, when you look at what the county and everybody else is putting into it, it's peanuts. At the end of the day, we still have to represent citizens. And if we want to make sure that they have that ridership, we just have to step up to the plate. If the others aren't going to step up, either that or cut the route.
Council moved to provide the funds. Also on Tuesday's agenda was an agreement with Live Nation to manage the amphitheater at Greenfield Lake. That item was postponed again until October 6th. Hannah Brasinger, WHQR News.
You're listening to The Weekly from WHQR Public Media. The pandemic has affected seemingly every aspect of our lives, and with no clear end in sight, food insecurity is skyrocketing. As Hannah Brasinger reports, local organizations in the Cape Fear region are bracing for the long haul.
The definition of food insecure is simple.
If I were to ask you, Hannah, if you know where your next meal is coming from, and if your answer is, I'm not sure or I don't know, then you're food insecure.
That's Beth Gaglione. She's the branch director of the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina. And she says that like many other areas in the country, food insecurity is ramping up in the Cape Fear region.
The staff is feeling the growth in the number, the amount of food that we're putting out every day, every week, every month. I mean, the numbers have been significantly higher.
And those numbers continue to climb. Pre-pandemic, a national hunger relief organization called Feeding America estimated that around 86,000 adults and children in Brunswick, New Hanover, Pender, and Columbus counties were food insecure. Based on unemployment and poverty rates, the group estimates that number is now over 121,000. Feeding America also reports that one in five people in central and eastern North Carolina will or already have experienced food insecurity in 2020. When it comes to food insecurity, one size doesn't fit all. It can mean not being able to afford nutritious food like fruits and vegetables, relying on frozen meals or processed, cheaper products, or it can mean losing weight because you can't afford to eat.
It's a wide-ranging definition, and I would say that definitely more people are food insecure than we realize, including college students.
That's Dr. Jill Wadey, Associate Professor of Sociology at UNC Wilmington. She says that as many college students now have to move back home, some come from lower-income households and may be losing access for food resources they received on campus. College students may also face more stigma to reach out for help than other populations, and certain food assistance programs aren't available to them.
For a long time, maybe the general population didn't realize that college students aren't all sort of like middle class or wealthy. So people are trying to pay their own way through school. They don't necessarily get access to government programs like SNAP.
Dr. Wadey says food insecurity is tied to a lack of financial resources. As the pandemic drags on, people lose jobs or hours, straining their savings accounts. Financial stress snowballs, making it harder for lower income families to get back on their feet, even after the economy improves and wealthier households begin to recover.
The research that I did around the Great Recession, we saw that even after it was officially over in 2012, people were still using food pantries and soup kitchens at a much higher rate than they were before the recession. So it's not going to go away as soon as everything, you know, starts looking better again.
Dr. Wadey and Beth Gaglione stress that fortunately there is assistance. Both say that the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, continues to be monumental for propelling the economy and helping people stay out of poverty. Local organizations are also providing resources. On the Cape Fear Food Council's website, you can find guides and visual maps for food assistance in New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender counties. Lists of local hunger support programs are also on the Wilmington Food Bank's website. The bottom line, says Gaglione, don't be afraid to reach out for help.
Families just may not know because they've never reached out. And it is a pride issue. And I am extraordinarily sympathetic to that. But this is also an extraordinary time.
Hannah Brasinger, WHQR News.
With the census deadline fast approaching, North Carolina is lagging behind the national response rate. Rachel Keith has more.
The deadline to fill out the census form is just 2 weeks away. While it's possible that date might be extended, census workers are trying to finish by September 30th.
We've got a lot of work remaining in North Carolina to complete the full work.
That's Tim Olson, Associate Director for Field Operations for the U.S. Census. He says that 3,500 locally hired census workers equipped with iPhones to collect the demographic data still need to count 650,000 addresses in the state. Right now, North Carolina's overall response rate is 87%. And Olson says if they're not on track to count all remaining households, they'll bring in additional resources. And with time running out, this is Olson's message.
If you receive a door knock over the next few days or a couple of weeks, it's really to your advantage and to your community benefit to cooperate and to answer the census.
Olson says by law, the census data must be delivered to Congress by December 31st.
There will probably be a lot of news, which states gained members of Congress and which states potentially may have lost members of the Congress due to the apportionment.
North Carolina is projected to pick up a 14th congressional seat. Rachel Keith, WHQR News.
And on Coastline this week, the candidate interviews continue. New Hanover County's Board of Commissioners has 5 seats total, and in 2020, there are 3 open seats to fill. Rachel Lewis-Hilburn spoke with 3 of the 6 candidates, Deb Hayes, Bill Rivenbark, and Jonathan Barfield. You can listen to that full hour-long conversation at whqr.org. The other 3 candidates, Leslie Cohen, Kyle Horton, and Skip Watkins, will be interviewed next week. On this week's Around Town with Rhonda Bellamy, Rhonda spoke with Wilmington actor Fracaswell Hyman, director of the newly released Netflix educational series Bookmarks. You can hear that interview on whqr.org. And that's what's happening in the Cape Fear region. You can listen to our continued news coverage at 91.3 FM. Visit our website or stream us online anytime at whqr.org. For WHQR News, I'm Caitlin Freund, and this is The Weekly.